Hello and welcome to Prospector's latest monthly mining roundup audio replay. This month we are digging into all things drill results and a few sidetracks with special guest Kirk Reed. Want to join in on future roundups? Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn for our upcoming live events. Enjoy the latest podcast.
So first things first, I want to introduce everybody. We're going to start with the Prospector team and then hand it over to our special guest. So Emily, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I am Emily King. I'm one of the founders and the CEO of Prospector and a geologist by background. So don't hold it against me as we start talking about drill results. Yeah. I guess going clockwise, Alessandra.
Yes, hi, I'm Alessandra. I am the head of data at Prospector. I'm a specialist on mostly in finance and economic for the mining industry.
Hi, my name is Titiana, and I'm a head of data science here at Prospector. And my background is quite unsurprisingly in technology entrepreneurship, and data science and AI.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kurt Breed. I am also a geologist and an engineer, based here in Toronto. I've just started a new role a couple of months back with Scotiabank as the new technical director in mining. Going back probably about 25 years plus in the exploration and consulting and mining space. So I'm happy to join all of you today for a great chat on drilling.
Yeah, we're super excited to have you for sure. So thank you for being our special guest. We'll try not to throw you any surprises here, but all right. So welcome everybody to the September monthly mining roundup. Thank you all for joining in this awesome discussion. As everybody has kind of alluded to, this month's theme is drill results. And that is because as you'll see in kind of our little graphic here, according to historic Prospector data, September, October, and November are generally the months with some of the highest amount of drill result announcements each year. So we thought this would be a good time to kind of go over what's been kind of announced, how to read drill results, how companies can better report drill results, et cetera. Now, I also am a geologist by background, and I have planned drill programs. And I'll be honest, drill result announcements can still be a little like wonky in my head sometimes, unless I'm paying really close attention to the project, and like see other drill results to compare it to. So I don't know who agrees with me on that, but sometimes I can find them a little bit confusing. Yeah. If you're in the comments, if you find drill results confusing, also let us know. That way I don't feel so alone. But drill results are super exciting, and they're meant to be kind of a marketing type thing, right? Am I correct in kind of assuming that from like a market financial standpoint? Like that's a big purpose of them for the juniors and explorers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not solely a marketing tool, but it certainly is, at least for the junior space, probably the most important feature to highlight of how a project's progressing. I just going back to that first slide, I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
I was really curious to see that curve spike up in September, which makes a lot of sense, at least here in Canada, where your drilling season pretty much ends towards the end of summer, and then everyone's back in the offices crunching numbers. And of course, the labs are all busy trying to get all those samples through their facilities so that people can put out press releases. So, no, that's a really interesting slide. I like that.
Oh,
And I
thank
think,
you.
yeah. Jess, it would be funny too if we were to overlay conference dates on top of this calendar. All right. I think you would see also, drill results coming out, out of the field season or the summer field season, at least for like in North America, and then prepping for like the fall, early winter conference season. And then they use the conferences in the spring again to finalize money for the summer, right? Like there is a bit of a kind of seasonal cycle.
Well,
For
that
sure, for
just
sure.
tying into that quickly, I know this is a bit of a deviation, but there was
All good.
this ongoing debate. I don't know if it's still ongoing, but at least I'm keeping the fire alive about the PDAC June convention, which I personally was a fan of. I loved it, just in terms of the weather. The timing was great for me. And you can see where it lines up on that graph there. It's obviously right in the middle of drilling season. as the results start to trickle in. So I understand the rationale behind it. But yeah, to your point, Emily, yeah, there's probably those key ones, PDAC, you know, Roundup in January, and I'm sure there's others around the world.
I know Jess and I were just at Beaver Creek 2 weeks ago, and it was also kind of very timely. A lot of folks presenting on the results that they had just gotten back from the lab and stuff. So yeah, they could at least push PDAC to like the end of March, right? Like, we just move it a few weeks. That's like the oldest week of the whole entire year. Yeah. But yeah, that'll have to be another whole roundup. I bet.
Yeah. Totally.
There we go. I know it did ruin my planned trip to Sudbury last year with all that snow. So huge bummer on that. But anyways, back to drill results. Mm-hmm. As Mark Davis just commented, overuse of drill results will make them wonky. I appreciate the use of wonky. I'm glad I'm not the only one using that here. but this was a recent Nugget, which is our weekly newsletter kind of poll that we did on social media and in the newsletter. And a lot of people are keeping a very close eye on drill results, but not everyone is fully understanding them. And again, for me personally, I know I really have to keep a close eye on the projects that I'm like watching for drill results for in order to fully, for me anyways, understand the project enough to make an investment decision. And I think a lot of that might have to do, and this is kind of where the discussion starts, is in the way that they're reported. You know, they see like the highlights or, you know, X hit, you know, huge grade over this interval, and there's smearing and there's some sort of, you know, kind of like marketing talk in there. And so that leads into this kind of this discussion of like where people get hung up on or not understand fully these investment decisions. And a lot of people, generalist investors, keep an eye on the stock prices to see how people who may know more react to these drill results, right? And I think that's how a lot of like non-traditional and generalist investors are kind of keeping an eye on these drill results. What are your guys' thoughts on A, are drill results confusing? B, could the industry do better about reporting them? C, how can maybe rephrasing drill results or helping people better understand them bring more non-traditional investment into the mining industry? I know those are three big topics. So whoever wants to dive in first on any of them, it's open to you guys.
Well, I'll kick it off. I think the one thing that a lot of times, especially non-traditional investors, maybe misunderstand about drill results is the results are important in the context of the overall geology of the deposit, right? So, you know, what it's saying is important, but in terms of like kind of proving or disproving or clarifying the hypothesis that the geologists have about what kind of deposit it is and kind of the grade and the tonnage and all that, but kind of the context is really important. And I think also the context of share price is equally as important. And that's why sometimes you'll see really good results come out, but share prices go down or vice versa, because there may be other business things going on that are not actually tied to the drill result, or you may have folks that are just looking for a great opportunity to sell, right? So, you know, I think as I always recommend to folks, you know, I'm not an investment advisor or anything like that, but I would just say, you know, mining and exploration is not the place to put your money if you're looking to put it in and get it out real quickly based off of a few drill holes, right? Understand the bigger picture of the deposit, the company, to where one drill announcement over another shouldn't really, you know, be making a huge impact on what you're thinking.
Yeah, context is key, like you said, Emily. And maybe one way to sort of divide the discussion is you know, thinking back to the Lassonde curve. If everyone here and online, you know, recognizes that name, it's basically a curve that represents on the one side, on the left-hand side, early stage projects, and on the right-hand side, you know, essentially operating mines, and you have this curve. So if we break this discussion down to projects in those early stages, those grassroots exploration projects where it may be the first hole. Yeah, absolutely. You know, putting that drill result into context to say, okay, you're confirming what your hypothesis was based on, say, geophysical results, or maybe you're doing some machine learning algorithm to test out you know, some ideas around targets there. So moving further along that line, if you have a project maybe with a resource already in place, an inferred resource, and you have more drill results coming out that either confirm the continuity of grade within a zone, or maybe are expanding the extents of the resource, those are all different ways to interpret it. So I've already forgotten what the question was, Jess, but
it's all good, it happens. Yeah. Just, I think you answered it great. Just digging into kind of how people can better understand drill results and perhaps how companies might better report them.
Yeah. And first of all, I mean, I don't believe there is any one recipe for how drill results should be presented to the public. You know, let's focus on public listed companies. You know, I know that the CSA, the Canadian Securities Administrators, has guidelines for how public issuers should present results. And that's done in tandem with standards that are set out by organizations like the CIM, the Canadian Institute of Mining, NI 43-101, standards of disclosure, you know, those sorts of guidelines. I would say for the most part, issuers do a pretty good job of providing the context, like we just talked about, the results in a way that, you know, the average investor might understand it. I guess maybe some improvements, sort of jumping forward to, you know, where we might see that. Visuals. I think you can't stress enough how important visuals are to, you know, to show where a drill hole is relative to property's extent, or where it is relative to, you know, some of your exploration targets. I think for the average investor, including myself, I'm a very much visual person, so I'd much rather see it on a couple of sections than reading it on a table.
Yeah, and I think, Kurt, to that point, like also where these holes are in comparison to past drilling, right? I think it's also something I always like to see. And like you said, in section view, not, you know, because it's so hard when you're talking about, you know, the inclination, you know, the direction that the hole is going in. Like, okay, so are you drilling like along the structure?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get a really, for those that don't know, like if you put the drill like straight down essentially the vein of gold, you're going to get a really different result than if you go through the vein of gold, right? So like, sure, you can be really clear in your written language about that, but it makes it much easier for people to understand, as you're saying, if there's a lot of visuals that are incorporated. And everybody has so many visualization tools kind of at their fingertips these days that...
Mm-hmm.
There's really no reason why you shouldn't be showing people, like just a basic map and some sections.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you just got me thinking that up till now, up in this conversation, I've been thinking solely of, you know, two-dimensional, static being, you know, a press release press release. But absolutely, you know, there's nothing to say you can't express or show or illustrate that information dynamically on a website or even in some 3D visualizing tool. There's tons out there to again just get a better understanding of what's going on.
Great. Tatiana, Alessandra, you guys got any thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is mostly from the work that I do, what I see is that even though there are standards for reporting of the drilling results, there are still a lot of variation in how people report them. And like the tables are not exactly the same, the column names are different. And I think this is kind of the first thing that is easy to fix and make it much easier for non-professional investors to be able to compare different companies to see what is the difference. You know, it's one thing to just glance and see that the numbers are different in the same metrics, and a completely different case when you have completely differently named metrics and you have two companies that you need to compare, and you have to spend half-day researching how these metrics relate to each other and which ones are actually just synonyms. So, and this is what technology can actually help us solve quite easily. So I think that's one thing that can be improved without too much effort and without too much mindset change as well.
Great. But I know, if I can tag on to what you were saying, Tatiana, this is also something we've looked at on the AI side, right? Because that standardization of the reporting or of the data, or once it's kind of done that way, you could use so many more AI tools or just technology tools to analyze everything, right? If it would make it easier on us.
Exactly.
Okay, so from my perspective, putting on the financial hat for a moment, I think that the more data is the better and the easiest for us to determine the resource and do this economic valuation. So if they can provide more data more clearly and more graphic, that will allow us to do this the job of estimating the resource a little bit easier mm-hmm. for an economic or a mining or investor trying to define the potential value of a project in that particular area.
For sure. And I just dropped a comment in the chat if you all want to respond in the audience, because we're a little curious. What tools or resources do you currently use to look at drill results? Are you putting them into an Excel sheet? Are you just reading the press releases? If you're just reading press releases, what news sources are you going to? This is something I know we're all curious about. So drop your answers in the comments here. What, same question for you guys. What tools or resources are you all looking at to keep an eye on drill results for those who may be just starting to get into looking at drill results and wanting to keep an eye on them?
Other than Prosper, correct. Well, I was going to drop a name of a service, but maybe now I won't. But, historically, you know, I would rely on, you know, just that press releases mm-hmm. to, you know, try and form some kind of opinion. There are other services out there, without naming any, that just recently, having, you know, started this new role, I have to say it is really great to have access to, you know, a consolidated current database of information, because it's a lot easier to you know, run queries, do comparisons. So yeah, for the average investor that maybe doesn't have access to that, I guess to Alessandra's point, the more information the better. And I know some, you know, some issuers will put out not just a table, but even append like a table from an Excel output, you mm-hmm. know, of caller information, survey data, results. Yeah. And you know, if you're savvy enough and you're eager enough, then yeah, you could probably do your own back of the envelope number crunching. But in most other cases, it's usually just, you know, pretty bare information.
You know, I wonder, and this is totally off of the kind of things that I was going to bring up today, but somebody was asking me earlier today about technology that helps you get to a discovery faster. And I wonder, when you look at press releases, and drilling results, like at what point, Kurt, maybe a question for you, do people announce a discovery? And I wonder if there would be a way to look at like what the average number of drill holes it takes to get to a discovery, or is that something, maybe that's something other people already know?
Again, going back to your comment about context, you know, if I was a company exploring for uranium or a phosphate, where one hole in an area known with, you know, with known mineralization, it probably wouldn't take that many holes, maybe a couple, mm-hmm. to confidently say you've got something. Whether or not you call it a deposit, I mean, that's, I think that's more of a marketing question than anything. But if it was a narrow vein gold deposit, you know, you may get a few sniffs here and there, but I'd probably take a few more. Again, without throwing out a number there, I'd say you'd probably want more than a few to outline a deposit.
It just reminds me, there was, and I won't name the company, but there was like a a resource announced a few months ago off of one drill hole. Do you guys remember that? You remember? And it was like, everyone was like, how did this get through? You know, it was, yeah. So for most, in most cases, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, more than one, right?
Sorry. Hopefully more than one. No, that's all good. Sidetrack there. We may have to do either a podcast or another live stream, because there are a lot of cool technology, and Tatiana, you can talk more about this upcoming tools for like generative discovery for like core logging mm-hmm. and stuff. And I don't want to say this on the live, but I'm going to. I don't like core logging. So I'm super stoked about those. Nobody hold that against me. Okay, so next topic. For mostly Alessandra and Kurt, but Tatiana and Emily, feel free to chime in here. So you both have like a financial background and a solid knowledge of the mining industry. Without giving any tips, because we're not giving investment advice, none of this is investment advice, please
don't listen to anything we tell you.
Right, exactly. We are not liable for any bad investments, etc. But what kind of things are you guys looking at when it comes to making decisions on drill results? Again, we are not investment advisors.
Well, I should preface whatever I have to say even before we started this podcast that all opinions expressed are mine alone. That's a great question. And I get asked that a lot as far as, you know, what it is I typically look for. You know, it starts with the, you know, the first principles of a project, location, the commodity, the results to date that are out. You know, those all kind of form the story behind the project. In a lot of these cases, a lot of them are brownfield projects, where brownfield meaning, you know, there was a mine there at one point historically, the mine shut down for whatever reason, and commodity prices or other modifying factors have changed, and the project's up and running again. So, you know, those are all sorts of things one considers when you sort of form an opinion on a project. The management team plays a big part as well. You know, if you see a management team that has a long history of exploration success, that are really, you know, into developing projects from start to finish, that's a really good telltale sign.
I would say my personal like preference, or not preference, but what I look to drill results for, is everybody always calls the drill the truth machine, right? So I really look at it as, again, like, is it a validation of what they thought was going to be there, what they've said was going to be there? How closely does it correlate? And if it doesn't, which of course happens a lot too, what is the revised understanding of what's going on, right, from a geologic perspective? And I think it's the reaction of the company to the drill results is just as important, I think, as the results mm-hmm. themselves. So that's kind of how I look at it. I don't look at it as great results today, buy more stock. It's more like, okay, yeah, they thought it was going to be this. The drill is saying that, yep, it continues to look like that. So continue on kind of as planned, or, hey, we're seeing something different than we expected. Here's how we're going to adjust. That's kind of how I like to look at them.
It's funny, what you said just got me thinking about that old saying in the business that, you know, a good explorer knows when to stop drilling.
Really? I've never met a geologist who wanted to stop drilling.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, you'd like to think that, you know, all explorers, you know, are able to, you know, acknowledge, you know, when their hypotheses maybe aren't proven true, or they're still developing their understanding of the deposit. Not every hole is gonna, you know, be a bonanza hole. Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Okay, from my perspective, I think that first, as long as you are middle to high certainty about the drilling results or what the company's trying to tell you, I will use that to do an economic valuation to determine to do a first assessment of the value of the project. but I would mean use all these real whole data and shape and your shape of the potential shape of the deposit and the location on everything related that we can find on the drill hole results. I'm talking about not just taking one drill hole result, but go probably into the past or more correlated information, or probably from companies that are very close by projects or deposits that are close by. And using that data, I will estimate the resources, obviously with the support of a geologist or engineering, to determine also if we can convert these potential resources. We know that they are not as certain as we wish for at this moment, and then determine the resources, converting into reserves, applying some economic parameters, some mining methods, recovery methods. And then with all that, try to create a very basic cash flow and apply some economic and financial statistics. That's how I would use it, but talking about from the perspective of an investor, but the same more knowledgeable about the mining industry. From my experience, I have worked for an exploration company for a couple of years, mostly estimating the value of the project in which the geologist has had more certainty that they were able to turn them into mines. So we did this exercise of evaluating the results. In that case, definitely it was easier because we were not only focusing on drilling, but we had all these different geochemical or geophysics. There are a bunch of additional data that we can use for it. But I think that the drill hole results are really good to have a first approach of what we are going to find on the land.
Actually, I guess one comment, maybe going back to what you said earlier, Jess, about not being a fan of core logging, that sort of reminded me of my, you know, first seasons in the field. And yeah, I'm with you there. I was never really that confident doing that sort of thing. And when if I look back now at, you know, some of the work I was doing there in terms of logging, I'm not really sure if I had a clue what I was doing in terms of, you know, how to delineate zones and how to draw out samples. And I've learned a lot since then, thankfully. But you know, all of that translates to the results you see on the press release, right? I mean, everything from the sample spacing, you know, mm-hmm. that's an important factor when you look at, you know, just look at the example of a porphyry deposit where, you know, typically you might expect evenly spaced samples that would probably be larger because of the scale of the deposit. Compare that to a narrow vein gold deposit where you would expect, again, sample sizes to be smaller in size. So that's something I would certainly pay attention to looking at a press release is, you know, how selective are they being in their sampling? Are they cherry picking, you know, zones to drive up the grade of an intercept? I mean, there's always rationale for doing both, but you just want to see consistency and transparency in how sampling is being done.
This brings to mind, we were talking about technology, and I think one of the really cool things that's come out in the last few years are like the drill core scanners, mm-hmm. right? And like the hyperspectral. And for those that don't know, now like there are maybe, and I've never actually used one, so if you guys have to speak to it, but basically you can pull out a core and scan it so that you have, I mean, you've got an image of the entire core that you can go back to. And of course, we always took like, you know, you take photos and you do that stuff, but I think it's getting really neat to where it's highly automated, even with different types of sensors integrated into the scanners. And that to me is closer to like how oil and gas has done hole logging for a long time, where they'll do a lot of stuff in the hole, right? Like, mm-hmm. Very, very different than how, at least from my understanding, we do stuff in the mining industry. And I think that's the part where the ability to go back and relook at something with different eyes, or maybe after you've learned some more, Kurt, you know, right? Like to go back and better understand it, because you're right. It's highly dependent on the interpretation essentially of the individual. And that's also where when it comes to like intervals and stuff, we get into like smearing of results, which I would love to not be the person explaining that, because then I'll get lots of angry LinkedIn messages. But
I'm equally excited by the technology, Emily. Like, I think we're just in the early days of this right now. And yeah, I mean, I think we still do to some degree rely on qualitative measurements, right? Like core mm-hmm. photos. But those can be quite subjective too. I mean, whether the core, you know, how, first of all, that photo's taken, the lighting, if it's wet, dry. I'd love to see someone write a thesis on, you know, how you know, results can change people's opinions on a property just based on how the photos look on a piece of property. So, and then also that archive you talked about, it's a digital archive that will exist beyond our years. You know, I was at a site visit last year where, you know, a forest fire had gone through the property, and it was the saddest sight. It was like a core shack graveyard with core, you know, millions of dollars worth of
all over the place.
All over the place, yeah. And whether or not they had archives, I don't know. But, you know, if they had that at least, then you'd have something to reference back to.
For sure. Alessandra, any additional thoughts on data and technology and drill results, since you are head of data here?
Yeah, I think that the idea of having all the accessible drill results, as we were discussing initially, that's very, very useful. If we can have some historic and have some data, we'll be able to do this comparison, especially if we can compare by location and also try to get more certainty as we read more drill hole results. We have discussed before, sometimes that serves to confirm the resources that the company thinks that it already has. And as a financial specialist and as a head of data, I would say data. That's everything we need, both of my sites, to do a financial evaluation or determine the value of a project.
Yeah, and I wonder how much, kind of what we're all talking about, I wonder how much like confirmation bias like comes into play with all of this, you know, to your point, Kurt, on like looking at how just the quality of photos, but like if you already have in mind what you're looking for when you're looking at a drill core, how much more do you see that versus maybe the totality of what's there? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a great talk this past week at the, I'm going to do a quick plug here for the Toronto Geological Discussion Group, the TGDG. And we hosted a gentleman, Hendrik, I forget his last name now, but he gave a great talk on sampling bias in drilling. And the number that really stuck out was when you compare what a drill hole assay result represents compared to the totality of the deposit, you're talking about a 1 in 1 millionth representation of what is in the ground. Because again, you drill that hole, whatever diameter of hole that is, you reduce that to an assay aliquot, which is, what is it, 25 grams or something really tiny. That tiny little assay is meant to represent the totality of that deposit. So there's definitely some biases that can be introduced, because you're only obviously going to be drilling the good stuff, not the bad stuff, unless you know, you're further along and are doing condemnation drilling. But for the most part, you have to take that into context, into consideration.
But there is a great, I don't know if anybody else uses Geology for Investors, the website, but they've got a great kind of review of all the ways that kind of drill results can go wrong in terms of like interpretation or smearing and stuff like that. The title of it is like, what do they call it? Lies, Damn Lies, and Drill Highlights. A critical look at interpreting drill results.
It's not pulling any punches.
But I think there's some stuff in there that is really cool about kind of all the things that we're talking about in terms of the different ways that you can interpret drill results and things that are really important. I just know we were talking about resources before, and I remembered that was one that I had gone to before to kind of reference. And I love their headlines. Someone's got a good flair for the headlines.
Yeah good sense of humor. Along with this video, Prospector will also be putting out a blog post about interpreting drill results, although our headline is not near as exciting. So heads up on that. I guess I still have time to change it. I could probably think of something a little exciting.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, as we're kind of rounding out this discussion here, I did get a note that for some people, the LinkedIn chat isn't working, but I did get a message here from Gotham. So hi, Gotham, about things that he looks at when seeing drill results. So the first thing is the rationale for drilling, whether they're stepping out or further defining what they had. And I think we kind of discussed that a little bit, what kind of environment they're in, green fields or brown fields. Also, the one I thought that was really interesting that he said, what kind of market are we in today? In his opinion, pretty good results won't garner any reaction from the market. So I know we were talking about generalist investors from what I had seen, kind of keep an eye on market reactions to drill results, determine investment decision. So if the market's not so great, there's not going to be a huge reaction. So I thought that was really interesting.
Well, and to that point, Jess, you and I heard that like in just about every meeting at Beaver Creek, almost in the opposite, like if the market's not going to react to good drill results, then why should companies go out and drill? Right. Like, so there were a lot of explorers. I'm stopping myself from calling them juniors now after somebody pointed out to me, like, why do we call them juniors? It just sounds funny. But so juniors and explorers, like, I think because the market is not valuing good results coming out from a drill perspective, like, I think you're going to see less drilling over the next year, frankly, because companies just aren't seeing the point until the market starts to kind of recognize the value of the results.
Yeah, I was just going to pull back up this slide here.
Yeah.
Because I think we're already starting to see that in the look from even last year to this year, just the number of drill results that we're seeing. So I think we're kind of already starting to see that. So it's a great point.
Because again, like it really does go both ways. People invest or don't based off of drill results, but companies either have money to drill or don't, depending on what the market is doing, right? Or drill less, which, you know, is just going to compound the problem that we're having, which is kind of like a lack of exploration investment. Therefore, yeah. Smaller and smaller pipeline of potential projects that eventually make it into development and production, which, you know, getting up on Emily's soapbox is just one more reason why the way we finance mining and mining exploration is kind of not working too great for what's going on in the world right now.
And just to stress that point, I mean, drilling still is today the ultimate validation tool and discovery tool for projects. There is not yet, you know, we talk about AI and machine learning and all the rest, but you know, those are tools to assist drilling in you know, optimizing drilling, but the drill result itself is still king. So,
but don't you think it's weird that, again, comparing to oil and gas, because I've worked in a bunch of like oil and gas focused countries as well. In that space, the expense and the risk of drilling is borne much more by the majors, right? I mean, the big brands are out there doing exploration and putting holes in the ground, whereas it seems flip-flopped in the mining industry, where the risk and the expense of drilling is borne by the smaller companies, the juniors and explorers.
Mm-hmm. I don't know much about, I don't know really anything about the oil and gas space, but I would expect the costs to drilling are higher in that space, are they not?
I don't know. That's a good question too. I don't know how it comes down. It's just my gentle nudge to all the majors out there. Like,
yeah,
help the juniors out a little bit. You know, that's all.
Gentle nudge of an elbow there. Awesome. Yeah. Well, so we're wrapping up this conversation. Like I said, the chat is not working for some, so we don't have any questions coming in, but you all can email us or send us LinkedIn message or anything like that. Don't hesitate to do that. And we'll do the best we can to answer any questions or share any insights on the blog post or the podcast coming out about this. But kind of going round robin here, any final thoughts, suggestions, ideas, anything we didn't get to cover?
I would just say to all the explorers out there, keep those drills turning. We have a big demand for minerals, especially the critical minerals here in Canada and elsewhere around the world. And that's not going to happen without, you know, concerted effort by all, not just the juniors, the seniors. Needs to be an all around effort across the industry. So keep it up.
Yeah, and I would just say, even if you're confused by the press releases, please keep reading them and starting to understand them. And if you don't understand anything that an exploration or mining company puts out, I always encourage people, send an email or pick up the phone, because I think mining is one of the few industries where, especially for the explorers, you can literally call and talk to the CEO and they will explain it to you. And a lot of times, you know, like, they love to talk to people about what's going on. It really is. We're a very accessible industry. And sometimes I think what we put out in press releases and even a lot of like the kind of promotional materials, it makes it sound much more intimidating than it is. Like, the people in the industry are great to talk to. They can walk you through it and explain what it is. So if you see stuff in press releases or reports that you don't understand, like, just pick up the phone or shoot an email, and I guarantee you the vast majority of those companies are going to be more than happy to get a geologist on to explain to you in great detail what all of that means, because we want you to stay interested and engaged in the industry.
Yeah, I think that once you follow Emily's advice and you fully understand the drill hole results, try to go farther and into understanding the company, understanding the geographical location of those potential resources, and why not add some economic analysis to it, not just stay with the market reactions, try to go a little bit farther on your own assessment.
Great. Yeah, for sure. And my final advice is always remember that mining is the first link in the supply chain. So even with all the EV advancements and battery technology and stuff, it's also going to need mined metals. So invest in mining companies.
Anyone specifically, because we don't recommend any.
Not any specifically, just in mining in general. If it can't be grown, it must be mines.
Yeah.
Yes, no specifics on here. Well, thank you all for joining us. Kurt, thank you for being our special guest.
Yeah,
all my great pleasure.
Insights on all of this. And we'll see you all next month on the next monthly mining roundup.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.